So this is a great place for us to pause and to open up the conversation. Steve and I have introduced the kind of what we're most excited about. Let's take some questions, some comments. Let's hear from folks who are on the line.
Amy Smith, I'm with a company called Hospice Buffalo. When you were speaking of the different industries that you've seen this type of management work in, you didn't really mention healthcare at all. I'm just curious what sort of application it has for healthcare.
Well, it certainly has application to healthcare. The thesis of my work and my book is that this has application to every organization. When you're starting to see something that has productivity gains of 200% to 400%, when it's implemented right, and when you're getting deep job satisfaction from the people involved, you'll have to ask, well, why not? Is there any conceivable reason why I shouldn't be exploring this and implementing this? So it certainly is applicable to healthcare. Now, what I was saying was, have I found large numbers of teams in particular sectors where this is very prevalent? And I have found some teams in healthcare, but I haven't seen the kind of evolved methodology that's been worked out in software development where if you follow, in a sense, this methodology, then self-organizing teams evolving into high-performance teams happens almost as day follows the night. So they're more advanced, I think, in spelling out what are the steps that you need to kind of create this in a laboratory. What I have found are many teams sort of in the wild, teams that got into a high-performance mode almost by accident, as the books say, kind of because the chemistry, or by luck, or lightning struck. And you find, I've come across a number of teams in the healthcare sector like that. What I was saying was, what about actually systematically creating every team in this mode? And that's where software development, I think I've learned a tremendous amount in the last year about what they've done. So it's certainly applicable to healthcare. And I'm certainly keen to hear of more examples from different sectors, and wanting to learn about, are there any other sectors that have worked out ways of systematically creating these teams? So I'm certainly not saying it doesn't happen in healthcare, but I would, to my work so far, would say that software development is paradoxically the area where the methodology is most evolved. Is that responsive?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yes. My name is Karen Zanetti. I'm from Maryland, and I was curious, how do you get organizations to make the shift from setting timelines first to having the conversations first?
Well, what you've got to do is you've got to look at what the intentions are behind the people who are setting up the change. You start having a conversation with them. That's what I've seen that works. And in that conversation, what you want to explore is, what does success look like to you? What is the intentions that you're having behind it? And what are the assumptions that you're making about where you're going to go, how you're going to get there? What's the path between here and there? And then some experience that can share with folks what's worked in other organizations can make a great deal of difference. What we've discovered is that just starting to bring key people into the conversation early on is a very vivid demonstration of how radically the transformation begins to take on new dimensions and shift in energy. And often that is, if it's highlighted, is enough to convince people that you really can't start a detailed project timeline until you've started having the conversations with people. So those are three different ways that I've seen be helpful in terms of helping people to make that shift from kind of project planning first to conversation first.
There's also a sequence of doing things, Seth, that I think that's interesting to point out. That look at Larry Prusak's book, What's the Big Idea? He looked at hundreds of big ideas, big changes that had been introduced into organizations, and he saw a pattern that had emerged in most of those cases. Typically, the idea is brought into the organization by the middle, someone in the middle management, the upper middle management gets the idea. and then builds a coalition, has conversations and builds coalitions with other people and starts to try it out in the organization and starts to adapt it. And then at a certain point, the CEO, the head of the very top of the organization, is brought into the picture and endorses it, and then the thing takes off. And that pattern is very, very common in the successful change programs. If the CEO is the one to bring it in without any support in the middle, then you can have tremendous problems as the idea may not mesh with the organization. But if you already have a coalition of people who believe in the idea, who are inspired, who are enthusiastic, and are ready to take off once they get the blessing, once they get the umbrella from the CEO, then you have a much greater chance of actually making it happen.
Did you have a particular challenge that you're facing right now along those lines?
You know, I have just been in implementation projects before where, again, they were very skilled in the technical issues, but the, you know, change management, interpersonal issues, they really didn't want to deal with them. And they just wanted to stick their heads in the sand and move forward with the technical aspects of the project.
Yeah, that's common, and that's why I think it's one of the main contributors behind the such large percentage, you know, 70-80% of change projects that fail. And what you've got is you've got people who are promoted into management because of their technical expertise and would prefer to be able to just design something and then hand it off to someone else and say, make it real. And the truth is that when systemic change takes over, you've got human beings with beating hearts who are out there talking to other human beings and wrestling through the difficult challenges that other perspectives raise, and that's what makes change happen, which is one of the reasons why it's so helpful to bring in somebody who's a specialist. One of the first large-scale communication initiatives that I was involved in, I required that I hire a professional communication specialist. And the same is true in the vast majority of situations where you have large-scale change. You really need to have someone in there who's been at the front and who's paid their dues. Thank you for that.